This is Word of Mouth from NHPR. I'm Virginia Prescott. It pains me to admit that summer is almost over, but you may still have time for one or two more short beach blanket books or vacation reads before school gets underway. So if you're looking for a slim paperback for August, may we suggest something from the Music Criticism series 33 and a Third. Each volume, in some cases hardly more than a long essay, focuses on one artist and one album. Anything from Neil Young's Harvest to Portishead's Dummy to Kanye West's My Beautiful Dark Twisted Fantasy. But with more than 100 titles thus far, the real problem is picking out which one to read. Stephen Dusner recently lauded 33 and a Third by compiling his 33 favorite books from the series for Pitchfork magazine. Stephen, welcome to the program.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
So for people who may not be familiar with the 33 and a Third series, what are they? Histories? Reviews?
It's actually a little bit of everything. They assign one album to each author, and the author writes a book on it, and the approaches vary wildly. There are histories of the album. There are stories about the album as it sort of grew and developed an audience over many years. There are deep critical analysis. There's even fiction. There are a couple of novels in the series about Black Sabbath and the Pogues, for instance. So it's a wide, all-encompassing series.
So who writes them?
Similarly, a little bit of everybody. They have open calls every couple of years, and anybody is free to send in proposals. So you'll get linguists. There was a linguist who wrote about the Sugar Rush parentheses album. There are critics, there are academics, there are novelists like Jonathan Lethem and Alan Warner. Anybody with a really good idea and can contribute.
How would you say the series has changed or evolved since 2003 when it first started?
I think it has evolved significantly over those years. When it started, I feel like a lot of the titles and albums that they were focusing on were what you might call boomer classics. It's a lot of stuff from the 60s and 70s, a lot of sort of canonical things like Neil Young, Love's Forever Changes, The Beatles, Elvis Costello. And I think as it developed, it took an interesting turn because you got younger writers, you had writers representing more disciplines, and you had more interesting picks, I think, that represent maybe a new generation's understanding of rock history. So, you got J. Dilla, Donuts, which is one of my favorite titles in the series, but you also got stuff like They Might Be Giants. You had Van Dyke Parks, who is sort of a curio from the 60s and is not, in fact, I think he may have one of the lowest selling albums for Columbia.
Palm Desert, market to buy.
All right, so going back to the easy pickings, though, do you have a favorite among the boomer classic, as you call them, that everybody would know?
The one on David Bowie's Low is very good. It's very in-depth, and I think it gives a sort of side of Bowie that is, to me, very interesting as somebody who's almost psychotically paranoid. I found that one to be extremely compelling. Another one that really stood out and I think is one that is very accessible and actually really exciting is the title on Live at the Apollo by James Brown.
Oh, it's a great record. Who wrote that one?
It was written by Douglas Wolk. He describes the music very vividly, but he also talks about what was going on during James Brown's run at the Apollo that year and how close we came to complete nuclear annihilation. And he sort of concludes by saying something along the lines of, James Brown saved the world that week.
Well, so that was after, what, the Cuban Missile Crisis or something?
Yes.
You know I feel all right. Yeah. You know I feel all right, children. Yeah. I feel all right.
Right. So how do you approach these? Do you pick out books that you're familiar with the album, or maybe listen to it as you read? What's your ritual around 33 and a Third?
Well, when I started this article, I decided that I would read them in order of the series instead of chronological order or just picking and choosing. I thought it would give me a good sense of the shape of the series, which was interesting because there were a lot of things I was not very familiar with, and it kind of put me in touch with, I had to go scramble for certain albums to hear them and kind of process them a little bit. And one in particular was Steely Dan's Asia, which I'd never heard. It's just one of those holes in my musical knowledge. And I have to say, I was not very impressed by it. It did not leave a big mark on me.
I'm so glad you said that, because now I can admit that Steely Dan is one of my just least favorite bands in the universe.
No kidding. I don't get them. We
might both get letters, Stephen.
I seen your picture.
I find that it is easy to enjoy reading about an artist that you do love. But did any of these books succeed in turning you around maybe on someone that you didn't already enjoy?
There were, in fact, a couple that made me think differently about certain artists. One of them was a title on Live Through This by the band Hole.
Oh, right. And the Courtney Love band.
Yes. And I think, like a lot of people, I kind of wrote Courtney Love completely off. I mean, she hasn't made anything really of note since that album, and yet she remains in the news. And yet I thought that the author of that book, an Australian journalist named Anwen Crawford, did a really good job of talking about not only what made that album exciting, but how it affected young women around the world who were searching for some sense of identity and found it in that music. And it was actually very moving and poignant at times. You know, another example was there's a very, very good title on Aphex Twin, and it's his 90s album, Selected Ambient Works, Volume 2. I don't write about a lot of ambient or electronic music, so I really did not have much context. I recommend that to anybody who is getting into that style of music, because it was just a phenomenal history.
I have to ask you about including Celine Dion, Let's Talk About Love. It just didn't seem, one of these things did not belong here, it seemed to me. Why did you pick that volume?
That is probably the most famous and best-selling title in the series, precisely for that reason. It is such an odd album to get behind, and I think that's sort of what animates that book, is trying to figure out why that album and Celine Dion are so denigrated in the West, and yet all over the world she is hailed as this kind of heroine. He gets into matters of taste and class and national identity, and how Celine Dion is able to sort of manipulate those issues and to appeal to fans from many, many different cultures. It's a fascinating read.
You went with the conceit, so to speak, and chose 33 of the best 33 and a Third. Now, what if you had to narrow it down to a top five? Do you think you've got those?
Top five. I would say Mark Wiedenbaum on Aphex Twin. I would say Carl Wilson on Celine Dion.
Whoa.
Jordan Ferguson on J. Dilla, which is a really, really amazing biography and analysis of something that you would not, it's looped samples, and you would not think that that would make a big statement about death, but he manages to convince you with a solid analysis that it does.
And kind of tragic, too, because J. Dilla died just after that album came out.
He did, and he made the album in the hospital while he was dying. So he knew what was coming, and he made this kind of as to document that experience. And I mean, it's a very chilling and moving book. It had a profound impact on me.
There comes a time.
Okay, so what number are we up to? 1, 2, 3, 4?
Okay. John Darnielle, he wrote a book on Black Sabbath's Master of Reality. And this is a slightly different approach. It's a fiction. And it begins as the journal of a teenager who is committed to a psychiatric ward. And so he is writing about that experience and writing about why he loves Ozzy Osbourne so much. It's a nice piece of criticism, but it's also a fine piece of fiction.
Okay, that's 4. What's your last pick?
My last pick would be Led Zeppelin 4 by Eric Davis. To me, that's an album that I'm pretty familiar with, but it made me hear it with new ears.
Are there any particular albums that you want to see written about for the series?
That would be a very, very long list, actually. Southern Rock Opera by the Drive-By Truckers, which is, first of all, an incredible album. But I feel like the time right now is perfect for that, considering the conversation we're having around the Confederate flag and Southern identity. Patterson Hood, who is one of the songwriters in that band, just published in the New York Times an amazing editorial about that imagery and how the band has tried very hard to avoid the Confederate flag. They don't like to see people waving them at their concerts, and they've had to stop performing certain songs from that album due to that imagery. So I think that would be a very topical and relevant one at this point.
Stephen Dusner, thank you very much for speaking with us.
Oh, it's been a pleasure. Thank you.
Stephen Dusner is a critic who compiled the 33 best 33 and a third books for Pitchfork magazine. There's a link to see his picks for yourself at wordofmouthradio.org. I got green.